my main memory at Ute-Bury Park is turning up with your borough jacket on a match day. So were you not a City fan growing up?
Cheers for that. Get that one in straight away. Yeah, I wouldn't be allowed to do that now, would I? I was born in Hull, but my dad moved to Stockton for work purposes. My brother was actually born in Stockton. So we lived there for 2 or 3 years, and my first football experiences were spent in the Holgate end at Middlesbrough. And my dad used to take me in my pram, by all accounts. I don't know, he takes someone on the terraces in a pram or a buggy, but apparently he did. So yeah, it kind of stuck. Obviously, lived in Hull from the age of 5 onwards. So I've always had kind of a vested interest in Hull City, if you like. But yeah, Middlesbrough's always been my team. So yeah, caught a fair bit of stick for that over the years from people, as you might expect. Not exactly. The one thing is, no one can call you a glory supporter, if that makes sense, because they've won one trophy in 100 and odd years, I think. So
yeah, fair play. I always thought it was a bold move, so fair enough.
I don't know why I was wearing the jacket at work. I'm not sure what was going on there, but anyway, yeah.
So you're saying you ended up working for City 97, 98. Like, how did that come about?
Yeah, so I think that was from... I think because it was obviously Tiger Sharks, wasn't it, at the time? And I remember when Hull FC got into the Super League, because I follow Hull FC as well, that there was an advert in one of the very first programmes for Hull FC, just advertising for people who perhaps wanted to contribute to the programme in a written way. So I kind of responded to that. It was Rob Smith, I think, who put the advert in. I think Rob was doing the programme at Hull City at the time as well, and obviously was a marketing commercial manager. So I replied to that, and it kind of went from there, really. So I think I started doing a little bit, just writing some stuff now and again for each programme, and then ended up kind of going in to help Rob. So that was an interesting time with both clubs being under the same banner, as it were. So yeah, seems like a lifetime ago.
Yeah. Yeah, what was it like as an FC fan then? Because, you know, we get City fans that have said they didn't really like that period where the clubs are closely linked and you had FC playing at, or Sharks playing at Ute-Bury Park. What do you make of it?
Yeah, it was a bit weird. And like you say, the kind of game's been... I remember going to a derby game at Ute-Bury Park, I think. Played Hull KR at Ute-Bury Park, which was quite a strange experience. Because all I'd ever known growing up, again, my dad took me to Hull FC from being young as well, was the Boulevard, really. So to kind of find yourself watching Hull versus Hull KR at Ute-Bury Park was a bit strange. Bit of a strange time in both clubs' histories, wasn't it? I don't think anybody remembers it with that much fondness on either side, to be honest. So yeah, not something to look back on with fondness.
Yeah. At what point did you start? Was it the pre-season to that season?
Oh, do you know what? Like I say, it began because there was an advert in the Hull FC program asking for people to write content for their match day stuff. So I kind of put my name forward for that because I'd not long since finished my journalistic qualification, and I was doing some stuff for the Hull Daily Mail as well at the time. I was kind of like volunteering, if you like, working on the sports desk with some, funnily enough, with someone you've had on here already, Colin Young.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Danny Fulbrook. The late Danny Fulbrook, who was a great bloke, by the way, taught me a lot. You had Chris Harvey, you had Andy Whittaker, you had Matt Barlow, Richard Tingle, John Fieldhouse, all people who massively helped me in one way or another. So yeah, I was kind of doing some stuff for them, and then the opportunity came along, and I can't quite remember how it is because it's so long ago, but I think from writing some stuff now and again for the Hull FC program, it kind of turned into going in and helping out, because I think both clubs being under the one banner, there was the kind of dual administration as well. So yeah, that's how it started. That's how I first met Rob, funnily enough. So yeah.
And like you say, you were writing in the program to start with. Like, yeah. How long before that kind of branched out? Because I suppose it was a thing at City where people would do a bit of everything, wouldn't they?
Yeah, so I think I started just writing stuff for Hull FC, and then obviously started doing a little bit for Hull City. Ended up being kind of taken on to kind of help. And like you say, it was a bit of everything, really. So it was programs, websites went, invented then yet, which will sound weird to a lot of people, a world without websites. But back then it was program. And you'd maybe send out a fax to the press on a Friday, which again, people might think, what's one of them? With team news on, which was quite strange when you look back at it now. But yeah, and you just chipped in wherever you could, really. Match days obviously were a big thing. Everyone chipped in on a match day and obviously had your designated role if you like, but also it was pretty much everyone chipped in and helped each other. So yeah, good times, to be fair.
You know, obviously what you went on to do with City, being their press officer.
Yeah.
Did you have an idea that that's what you wanted to do early on, or not really?
Do you know, when I did my qualification, it was to be a sports journalist as such, rather than a sports PR person, and that kind of happened by accident, really. So after I'd done that, I think I did a year, when it 97, 98, left there, did a couple of kind of in-between jobs while I was trying to look for work in that line of journalism, and ended up working on a football website called Zoo Football, which at the time was one of the three big websites. I think you had Football 365, Sky Sports, and Zoo Football. And it was the start of the dot-com boom, as they called it, early 2000s. So yeah, I was on there as a staff writer, based in Sheffield. So I was traveling to and from Sheffield every day, 5 days a week. But yeah, it was a good experience. That writing on a national football website was really good. I think a lot of it happens by chance. You know, it's kind of, I didn't really know what the plan from there was. And then I got a phone call from Rob Smith. I'd been at Zoo 14 months, I think, and Rob rang up to say that Football League were introducing websites for all the clubs, and would I be interested in coming along and kind of, you know, taking on the whole City website, if you like. So it was all from scratch. And that's how it started. So it's kind of being in the right place at the right time. There's a lot to be said for that. And then because I knew Rob from the previous, 3 or 4 years before that, it was probably time for me to come back to Hull. I was traveling every day, it was getting a bit much, it came at just about the right time, that, for me, really.
And was that when Adam Pearson was already there and everything?
Yeah, so Adam had joined the club, or bought the club, in the March 2001, and I started in June 2001, which, God, 21 years ago this year, that's quite scary. So yeah, Adam was kind of sorting the club out, putting his stamp on things. Like I said, you know, websites were becoming mandatory across the Football League, and every club needed someone to kind of run that. So when I went and joined the club, still at Bruford Park, obviously, we were based in the old Bruford Park offices. There was a couple of porta cabins on the car park that Adam was in one of those. So yeah, it was interesting. You know, I think we knew the stadium was on its way at that point, but it seemed a long way off. So yeah, so I came in to kind of do the website primarily, but was obviously helping with the program and bits and pieces around that. I mean, in that area, you didn't really need a press officer as such, because you had the Hull Daily Mail, Radio Humberside, basically, and they basically would turn up, I think, on a Friday at training and on a match day, and just grab the manager and whoever they wanted to speak to, which obviously it's changed a lot now. But yeah, you probably didn't specifically need a media person then. It was more around populating the website and the program and looking after that side of it.
And how much had a lot changed in the few years that you've been away, kind of thing?
Not massively. I think it was about to start with Adam coming in. And I mean, if you'd have said to me at the start of that's 2001, if you'd have said what would happen in the next 10 years that I was there, I'd have laughed at you, because it was just, it would have been a ridiculous fantasy, wouldn't it? To say,
yeah, of course.
There'll be back-to-back promotions, you'll get to the Championship, have a couple of years in there, and you'll end up winning a playoff final at Wembley, and suddenly working in the Premier League was like, I'd never contemplated working in the Premier League. Or, you know, I remember when we got into the Championship, I was like, wow, this is good. I'm quite happy with this. But that's probably because I'm not the most ambitious person you'll ever meet. But it was, yeah, the kind of that. I always say to people now that if you could have picked 10 years to work at a football club, that would have been those 10 years that I had. I was really lucky. Obviously, after I left in 2011, there were a lot of good years beyond that with FA Cup finals in Europe and stuff. But the stuff that happened, I think it was special because it was a first of everything, if you like. It's a first Wembley visit. And the back-to-back promotions were really good. So, yeah, the club went on such an upward trajectory in such a short space of time. It's when you talk about it now with people that used to work there and we get together, it's kind of, how did that happen?
Yeah.
How did that work?
Yeah, obviously, like, some good people around the club. But in terms of the hierarchy, like, did you see, obviously, a difference in personnel from 97 to when you went back?
Yeah.
But could you tell it was like a different atmosphere as well?
Yeah, I think you could tell the club was going to be driven for success. You know, that's the way it was being built. You had staff coming in, staff who'd had a lot of previous experience, which was good. A good bunch of staff as well, a lot of people that you're still in touch with now, 20 years on, which says a lot about the people that you worked with, that you're still in touch with them. And yeah, it was brilliant, really. It was geared up for success. I don't think Adam ever bought it just to come in and just, you know, have half a go at it. I think he wanted to have a proper go at it. And the staff behind the scenes drove a lot of that as well with what they brought. So, and obviously the team on the field, the management, you know. Yeah, scary when you look back now at where it started to where it, you know, to where it went.
Yeah. Now, I remember that 01-02 season because there was a lot of expectation, weren't there, that didn't really pay off?
So my first summer was when I think we signed 13 players under Brian Little. 13 players. That was quite a busy summer in terms of populating websites. We seemed to sign somebody every week. And it never, obviously it didn't quite work out. And I think obviously Brian Little was the manager at the time, wasn't he? And Brian went, and then Jan Molby came in, and yeah, there was a lot of change, and I think it took a while to kind of to settle down, really. But yeah, you could see that the ultimate goal was set firstly to get out of that bottom division and then go from there, really, particularly with the stadium on the horizon. You know, the stadium was being built half a mile down the road, and I remember going to look at it from the top of Hanlaby Road flyover now and again and think, like, this is incredible, really. We're going to have this massive, incredible stadium in Hull, which was obviously Boothby Park was brilliant and everyone's got amazing memories of Boothby Park. But I think that the stadium was a big catalyst to what followed, just in my own opinion. So,
yeah, of course, yeah.
You know, the crowds that came to that, to the KC as it was, were, well, I mean, you were there, weren't you, every week. It was phenomenal, really, to be getting like 16,000 regularly, 20,000+ in the bottom league was just frightening.
Yeah. I suppose for someone like you that's working with, you know, the website and technology, you must have been gagging for that move, really.
Yeah, I think we needed it. I think, like I say, Boothby Park, you know, just in terms of corporate space, you know, there wasn't all that, you know, the famous press box and the steps and the facilities that yourself and your dad had to work with were brilliant. I just think it opened a whole new era and a whole new dawn for the club in terms of the type of people corporately that you could accommodate. Just a much better experience for fans, I think. You know, clearly you had some great kind of dynamic at Boothby Park, wasn't there? There was some, you know, but it had come to the end of its lifetime, hadn't it? I think that, you know, the stadium. So I think it was time for that. And yeah, seeing that stadium kind of gradually appear from the ground was something I'll tell my son about when he's older and show him the pictures and stuff, because yeah, it was like, no, this is how is this happening here?
Yeah.
You probably felt the same. Obviously you were a lot younger at the time, weren't you? But
no, it's mad. I remember they did those like open days, didn't they, where you could just walk around.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's hard to imagine us actually playing there because it just looked like another world, yeah.
Yeah, it did. I mean, you'd seen stadiums like that built in other cities and towns, but you just never thought it'd be here, did you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it was
mega.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be the 20th anniversary this December, isn't it, at the stadium, which is, well, makes me feel old.
But yeah, in terms of the website, obviously, like you say, it's a bit of a blank canvas. So could you, like, just come up with an idea and go to Rob, Bard and Pearson and be like, this is what we want to do?
Yeah, it was pretty much templated. So if you remember, I don't know if you remember,
all the clubs, .net thing.
Yeah, it all looked, every single club website looked the same in terms of the appearance and the menus that you had, the sections, as it were. And the only difference was that it was branded in your club's colours, but everybody had the same platform. You all shared the same kind of content management system, which at the time was problematic because it was brand new. Everyone was running off where you used to plug, unplug your office phone and then plug your internet cable into the wall, dial up. It's one of the first things I did actually when I started at Boothry Park. That second time was that I had to go to there used to be a big B&Q just down Anlaby Road. And I had to go there to get an extendable kind of internet lead so I could reach from my desk to the phone socket to plug it in to get a connection. Whereas now, I mean, that, you know, tell people of a certain age that now they just go, what are you talking about? So, well, that's how it was. You know, it was dial-up.
Yeah. I mean, like, how, I don't know if dysfunctional is the right word, but how dysfunctional was Boothry Park compared to, like, what it became at the KC in terms of match day routines and everything?
Yeah, it was just much easier at the KC because you had so much room and everything was new. You know, just from a point of view of the press box, you know what that press box looked like. It only had probably about 10 seats. So if you got a big game there in the FA Cup, you struggle to accommodate everybody. So, yeah, just having those facilities, I think, as much as people wanted the history, to keep the history of Boothry Park, I think the club to go forward probably needed that move. You know, you had the Circle restaurant at the stadium was full every week. Whereas at Boothry Park, you know, I think towards the end, they were setting up the old gym at the back of the south stand to... To put corporate people in there, just especially for the, you know, the last game at Boothry Park, that was absolutely full. You had all the ex-players in there from the different eras. So, yeah, it was an easier space to work in. But obviously, I get that people missed, you know, they missed where they stood or where they sat for all those years. You know, my great granddad would have been going to Boothry Park from when it first opened. You know, he was a massive Old City fan. So I'm not sure what he would have made of it. But, you know, the stadium, I think people say the stadium was ahead of its time when it was built. And then obviously it had that kind of lifespan of 50 odd years, I think it was. So yeah, shame to see it go, but I think it, for the club to go forward, and it's happened quite a lot of clubs, hasn't it? A new stadium's kind of driven a rebirth of clubs, I think.
Yeah. Do you think it worked the same for FC as well in that regard?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, again, you know, I went to the Boulevard as a kid. Not just rugby league. I used to go watch the Speedway at the Boulevard. I was quite involved in the Speedway for a number of years when it was at Craven Park. And yeah, I mean, the Boulevard, again, spiritual home, but it had seen better days. And I think it kind of kickstarted Hull FC as well in that sense. So I think it was just the right thing for both clubs. I know some people might disagree with that, but in my own personal opinion, I just think it was the right thing at the right time.
And you talked about like the last game at Boothry Park and
yeah,
you know, the first game at the KC. Like, how manic was it in the build-up to stuff like that?
Really busy, yeah. Because obviously, just from my own side of things, the press interest in the last game at Boothry Park was enormous. You no longer just had the whole Daily Mail and Radio Humberside there. You had national newspapers, you had Sky, you had people that wanted to be there to mark the occasion. Whole lot of build up behind the scenes for all the staff, really, the ticket staff, the corporate staff, the marketing, you know, all the end of year merchandise that was produced that I still sometimes look at now. And just a big build up to a massive day, I think, and quite emotional day for a lot of people as well. You know, there's some people who've been at that club a lot longer than I'd. Obviously, I'd only just really started, but there were some people there who've been there a long time. So to kind of see it for the last time, if you like, was probably a really emotional thing. So yeah, it was a busy day, and then obviously we had quite a quick transition to moving across to the KC. So there wasn't a lot of time for reflection, really. You just had to get on with it and move on. So yeah, we were straight across the road, setting up for the first game there as well.
Yeah. I remember things not being quite ready for that Sunderland game. That's my memory of it.
Yeah,
like being in the PA box and stuff.
Yeah, there was I think there was just a, I think there was people going to their seat and just finding a concrete step, I think. So yeah, so but again, you know, what an occasion that was, and
yeah.
It was difficult for us behind the scenes because we were suddenly working with a ground that we'd not really seen. So we didn't, you know, again, purely from my side, which was one small part in the big machine, but I'd not seen really seen. I think I had one visit to look at the press box. So I knew it had 42 seats. I knew what it looked like. I knew where the ISDN lines were for the radio commentaries. But to then try and think, oh no, again, there was a massive interest in that game because it was the first game. So everybody wanted to be there and was like, have we got enough press seats? Then what do we do? So, and again, there was a whole lot of build up around it in terms of the pre-match. I remember the pre-match was, I think it was Burnsy and Waggy reenacting a kind of a goal. I think I remember that vaguely.
All right.
But yeah, there was a whole lot of stuff going on around it, wasn't there? And it was, again, some occasion for everybody to kind of remember and look back on. And I've still got the programme somewhere. I've kept quite a lot of bits from that kind of era. So yeah, crazy times, but good times.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And in terms of like, you know, liaising with players and managers, at what point are you having to build like good relationships with them in terms of linking with the press?
Yeah, probably. I think when we moved stadium, that it started then. Obviously, Peter Taylor coming in just before we moved was a massive thing. I remember thinking, you know, got told, right, Peter Taylor's going to be the manager. We need to write the press release. He's coming on Saturday to the game. I can't remember what game it was, but he went on the pitch at halftime, didn't he? And
I remember that.
I'm thinking, wow, this is the guy who made David Beckham captain of England. And I've got to work with him. This is quite scary. So, yeah, there was a lot of interest around Pete coming in as an individual because, obviously, for him, he'd been at the top level as a manager. So coming to Hull City, people are like, oh, this is interesting. So yeah, there's a lot of interest in that. And then obviously the 2003-04 season, you start winning every week and looking like you're going to get promoted. So it becomes a story. And that's probably when you started building up that kind of liaison with the press because they wanted a lot more. And it's how you manage that. It was important. Each manager manages it differently. They have different systems that they put in place for player access, for access to themselves, for when they like to do the press conference at which part of the week, stuff like that. So, yeah, but Pete, you know, I'm still in touch with him now. You know, if we have different events on, you know, for past things for like the OSC and things like that, we, you know, I've let him know about a couple of those. And I think he got involved in a book launch for Rich Gardam in London when Rich launched his book. I think he did a book launch down there as well. And I think Pete went to that. So, yeah, a really good bloke. And I always think, again, he was the catalyst because I guess when you're recruiting players, players were looking at the stadium, the ambition of the club, the manager, and thinking, yeah, I want to go and play there. So you got people like Andy Dawson coming through the door, Danny Allsop, Jason Price, you know, people like that. And you already had some really good players that had arrived before that. You know, you had from Jan Mulby, you had Stuart Elliott, you had Ian Ashby, and it kind of went from there, didn't it? And yeah, that, yeah, just great days. Really, really good days.
And I suppose, you know, as everything's growing along with technology and the club, does your interaction with the players become bigger when you've got more content to kind of put out there, obviously?
Yeah, and you kind of looking after them a little bit as well in terms of So if they were new signings and they wanted a bit of help of, you know, where do I find this? How do I find that? We all kind of, you know, these days you'd have a player liaison officer. Back then it was kind of a combination of all of us behind the scenes helping, really. So just try and help them settle in. You know, we'd go down the training ground with all, you know, the balls and the shirts that needed signing. We'd do that once a week. And used to train at Boothby Park then, funnily enough, so used to lay out in the dressing room after training. Yeah, and you had that kind of rapport with the players. Sometimes they'd get upset about stuff or they didn't want to do stuff, but, you know, that's life. But 99.9% of the time, you know, that group were really good. And again, now when I've helped in a couple of other podcasts get hold of ex-players and they've kind of come to me and said he's still in touch with so-and-so, and it's like, yeah, and it's nice for me to be able to help for a start, but it's nice to be able to drop someone a message and say, now then, how are you doing? Do you think you might do this chat? And they all enjoy talking about it. I think it's those that kind of first promotion season in particular was, you know, it was the first success in, I think it was 19 years, I think. So yeah, it was something that I guess that team will always be revered because it achieved success after such a long spell without any. So
yeah. And in terms of like choosing players for stuff, then would that be because of you talking to the manager in terms of who was available?
Yeah. Again, all managers were different. The ones that I worked for, some were quite relaxed about it. Some were quite strict about it. Ordinarily, I think, I'm just trying to think now with Peter Taylor, I think you should go to Peter and say, Hull Daily Mail have asked for player X. Is that all right if they do it? Yeah, that's fine. Or no, it's not. Pick someone else. Right. Okay. What about plan B? Can we do plan B? Yeah, that's all right. Or, you know, but stuff like if someone got sent off, obviously sometimes the press would ask to speak to that player, but that was never really going to happen because that wasn't a good idea. So, yeah, you managed it, but what we always tried to do is not manage it too much. And again, share it out, share the responsibility. You had players who were more comfortable than others, but you didn't want the same player doing the press every week, pre and post game. You needed to share it out a little bit. And kind of later on with Phil Brown, Phil had a system where we did it on a rota. So we'd have two different players would do pre-match every week. And we'd literally just do it on rota, really. Or we'd try and tie in. If it was someone's ex-club that we were playing, we'd try and tie that in as well within reason. But yeah, our managers were... that I worked for were different in their approach to that, really.
And obviously skipping out a bit of time here, but how big was the difference for you when we become Premier League? Like, what was the golf like in terms of what you had to do every week?
Enormous, yeah. I had to learn a lot pretty quickly then. Yeah, and again, not just me, the whole club. I mean, when I started, there was me and Rob Smith kind of working on that side of it, if you like. Then I think 03 or 04, Matt, I don't know if you know Matt Carrington, Matt came in to help. Matt started doing programs for us. Then not long after that, I think season after, Gareth Griffiths came along. You had Luke Cash doing the filming with Phil at Forest Edge. Dave Batty doing the commentary. So you had all these people come in and suddenly we were producing a magazine. This in the Championship, we were producing a monthly magazine, City Magazine, which took some work. But when we talk about it now, we're all quite proud of it. I think at the time for a Championship club to produce in that was brilliant. So obviously when you get in the Premier League, it becomes the kind of, it's 24/7 is the best way I can describe it. You, especially because we were Hull City, there was this whole mystique around Hull City being the Premier League and first time ever and what a story. So kind of from getting promoted at Wembley onwards, it was just, yeah, absolutely manic. And we had to gear up, you know, if you go up via the playoffs like we did that time, you've got the shortest leading time. So we suddenly had to get geared up for the Premier League in terms of everything, you know, ticketing, marketing, corporate, everything had to be geared up. And I remember we had to go to a session in London with the Premier League to talk through what would be expected, how to do things, minimum requirements around how many press seats you had, all that kind of stuff, which was brand new to us, really. And we didn't have long to get that ready for the Fulham game. So, and that pre-season in particular, you know, everybody wanted to talk about and film and read about Hull City, which was brilliant, really. You know, we had camera crews from overseas coming over to the training ground to kind of just do the story, because the story was Hull City, which was brilliant. Then you're in the territory of Match of the Day there every week.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was when we got to that point, my job became more or less full time on the media liaison side, really, because you had interview requests coming in all the time. So I used to print them out, put them in a folder, go down the training ground, sit with the manager, and he'd go through and say yes or no, depending on what he wanted us to do. And then you had commitments through the Premier League that you had to adhere to. But all the while as well, making sure that your local media was still getting their access, because they'd been with you all the way through. So you went from having the whole Daily Mail journalist talking to the manager on their own every week back in the day at Bruffy Park to now having written press conferences where everyone sat together and the manager sits at the front, which was, you know, even creating a new media room. We had to create a new media room to meet the minimum requirements of the Premier League. So, it was a big step up, really, that summer. You know, we had to find someone to put in the instant replay screens in the press box. And if you remember them, we had to get that done. And we had to have more seats. So it was all a bit of a rush, really. But when you look back now, that kind of sense of achievement of getting to that Fulham game, getting through it and obviously winning, was just like incredible, really. And people say to me now, what was it like? It's like, it's hard to describe. It generally is hard to describe. It was just brilliant. And obviously then from there you start going winning at Arsenal and Tottenham and doing all these things. Bananas. And it's like, wow, what's happening here? We're fourth at Christmas, I think we were. But what a journey, like unbelievable. And I would say to people, I was, you know, talk about right place, right time, massively fortunate to be part of all that. And it's funny when we get together now, because myself, Gareth, Matt, Jeffro, Luke, a couple more, Damon, who used to work in accounts, we get together and we quite often say, you know, what, it was just going to work every day was such an enjoyment. Not just in that Premier League season, but even before that, you know, that it was a great place to be. So, yeah.
When,
great fun.
Obviously, yeah, when we started that season, it was amazing beating teams. But when it becomes a bit more difficult on the pitch and things are a bit more tough, how does that affect your relationship with the manager and everyone?
Yeah, it didn't really affect relationship with the manager as such. It just meant that as a club, maybe we were a little bit less open to stuff, I suppose. But we still did. You know, you still do your pre-match every week with your manager and two players. You still do your post-match. And you have to keep fronting it, really. I could be wrong, but I don't ever remember it. It was like, you know, dodging anything, as it were. I think we just carried on doing what we were doing. Because like you say, the second half of that first season was tough. And obviously the season after was tough. But yeah, we pretty much kind of stuck to the system, really, because you've still got to front the media, even if it's not going well, and that, again, you know, the game is funded by a lot of the media rights money, isn't it? So you've got a commitment to fulfil those media obligations every week. So yeah, and it won't, you know, when you're losing every week, it's not great, but that's, you know, we'd been through that in the Championship a couple of times. And it's part of being in football, I guess. You suppose you get them. There was nothing worse than going into work on a Monday when you'd lost. but that, you know, I'd say that the great days outweighed the not so great ones for me, definitely.
Yeah, it was the most kind of surreal point when you're away in Beijing with the team.
Yeah, wow, that was an experience. Again, when my little one's old enough, I'll tell him about that. It was, do you remember, Tono, we're playing in the Asia Trophy. I was like, all right, okay. And it was done on, I think, because we were like fourth at Christmas, I think they took the English representation from the Premier League was taken from that league position. So there was us, West Ham and Tottenham. That pre-season, so we had the pre-season training camp in Bormio in Italy, where we went. Phil Brown used to, that was his kind of training camp, if you like. Then we had Beijing as well. So did a lot of traveling that summer, but again, it was a surreal experience, kind of being part of a tournament like that, you know, alongside Spurs, West Ham, and obviously Beijing as well. It was some experience. I know that much. And I guess, I mean, a few people said, "Oh, was it like a holiday?" It's like, no, it was nothing like a holiday, really. I think we had 5 days there, and if we were at games, we were at training, producing content, or we were managing press conferences, or there were a couple of days where we took some of the players to some of the Premier League kind of community events, which were going on, which was fantastic. I think we took Michael Turner and someone else to one of those, which was great. And yeah, just that whole experience. I think we got one day where we went to the Great Wall on a bit of a sightseeing event, if you like. But other than that, we literally are either at the training ground where they were training, wherever that might be, it was a couple of different places, at the games, or we were in the hotel sending stuff, you know, content back. So it's myself and Gareth went on that trip. So yeah, we were quite busy. I think people thought we were just sat with our feet up, but that definitely wasn't the case. But yeah, again, like something that I never thought I would ever do, you know. So yeah, brilliant, really.
Yeah, like I say, if you've managed to think of a funny story about a player.
Yeah. So it's not the Boothby Park here, it's beyond that, but JJ Kotcher, who I'm sure most people remember, was a bit of a character, and also a top bloke as well. So, but JJ had this habit that, the first time he did it was... was quite annoying that you would say, "Oh, JJ, this afternoon you've got a public appearance, so maybe going to a school, visit a charity, whatever." He'd go, "Yep, no problem." So used to tell them where they would do, what they were doing, where they were going, all the rest of it. And then 5 minutes before, you'd be there and be no sign of JJ. You'd be like, "Oh no, is he gonna turn up?" So you'd ring him, and JJ'd say, "You know, what's up?" And I'm like, "Well, where are you? Why are you not here?" "Oh, I'm not coming." "Like, you what?" No, I'm not coming." And he'd go, "Oh, what? You can't do this." And then he'd walk around the corner on his phone. So that was one of his little tricks that he did. Yeah, she was like, "Wow, cheers for that." proper panic on there, and I had no need to. You were just winding me up. So yeah, yes.
Was he a good character like that, yeah?
Yeah, massively. Got involved in everything community-wise. I remember us doing we used to do the hospital visit at Christmas to the Children's Ward at Hull Royal. Used to take the players to that. We'd hand out lots of different Hull City presents. And JJ was, a real hit at that. You know, with him being such a kind of... just a global icon, wasn't he, in terms of football, JJ? I think he often said that one of the beauties, I think, of playing in England was that he could go to the shop and, yeah, he'd get a few people talk to him, but he wouldn't get, you know, the whole supermarket stop to come to talk to him. So, great bloke. Just so down to earth for everything that he'd achieved. Which was great, really, because you're never quite sure how people are going to be. Suppose that's, you kind of judge them before you get there, which isn't the right thing to do. But you know, when someone's been a world star or they've played for their country and stuff, and you think, oh wow, how's this going to work out? But yeah, absolutely brilliant. Same as, you know, your Nick Bambies, your Henrik Pedersens, you know, people like that were amazing, really. As were the lads who hadn't been at that very top level. But it's just when you, I don't know, they kind of walk in, you go, well, have I never seen you playing on telly?
Yeah, yeah.
Can you do the press for us? well, when JJ came, the press interest in him was phenomenal.
I remember going to watch him in a reserves game first at Scunny, I think.
Yeah. The interest in him from particularly, well, obviously over here, it was because we're in the championship as well. But I remember the press day we did to announce his signing at the stadium. It was, must have took the best part of 2 hours. But he never once complained. We had TV crews and journalists from all over the world, really. But he just got on with it. I think he'd seen it all before, done it all before, so it was fine. But yeah, he was a character.
Did you have to sort those signing days out then, like when Bambi's wearing that massive shirt and stuff like that?
Yeah, I don't think he's ever forgiven us for that. Yeah, again with Nick, before Nick came to the club, I'd not really met him. And I was conscious of the fact that he was probably that first big signing, wasn't he, in that era? So I was conscious of the fact that we were going to get flooded with demands for his time from the press and from different things. And I'm thinking, how is this going to play out? And again, he was absolutely brilliant from day one. Just wanted to be kind of immersed in the club, as all the players did. I think that was the beauty of it. You know, we were taking, when we were in the Premier League, we were taking players to Hull City OSC branch events in Hornsey and Market Wheaton and places like that. And you were literally, you know, having small audiences with Premier League players. It was fantastic, really. But yeah, that shirt, I sometimes see that photo pop up with Nick and Adam Pearce. And I was like, oh no, how bad does that look now in retrospect? But I think it was the only shirt we had at that time, because I think that was the shirt for the forthcoming season, wasn't it?
Right,
we only,
yeah,
had one, which I think was like the finished sample or something. So yeah, it was a little bit big.
I remember reading, yeah, I think you might have tweeted about it actually, Chef Wednesday away. Did you have to go for an emergency short hunt or something?
Yeah, so there was some issue with the colour clash with the shorts, which happened right, I think either the day before or the day of the game or something. So I had to go to Harrogate, I think it was. Oh no, sorry. Adam had been, I think, to Harrogate, to where, which was not far from where I lived, I think, picked up a load of shorts from Sports Direct, and I met him at Leeds United's ground just to literally hand over. He handed the shorts over to me. I took them back to Hull to get them printed up, ready for the game. So yeah, so that's why that night's a bit of an anomaly when people look at it, and it always makes me laugh on the yearly anniversary, like you say on social, because of the fact that those shorts just looked, I mean, I don't know what sizes they were, but every single player looked like they were in enormous shorts, didn't they? Yeah. So yeah, it was a bit of a, it wasn't quite funny at the time, I don't think. But I think now you can look back at it and laugh and think, yeah, wow. Going to Chef Wednesday in front of 8,000 Hull City fans, winning like that and wearing some shorts that weren't particularly the right ones. So, but I think they've become collectible, haven't they? I think, I don't know if people,
really?
People have got some of them, yeah, because they were literally just, they've just filled the gap for that game, I think. So
okay. Les Mullerby probably has some, yeah.
Yeah, I think Les maybe has. He's got everything else, hasn't he, Les? I went to one of his exhibitions for City of Culture. He's got some incredible pieces in his collection. I don't have too much, if I'm honest. It's one of my regrets is that I didn't collect a lot. I've filled some gaps in terms of last game at Boothry Park, got both programmes now, got some stuff from the early years as well. I didn't really get any shirts or anything. The one shirt that I've got in a frame is Nick Bambi's shirt from when he scored the goal at we won at Bradford. Remember we won at Bradford?
Yeah, good day that, yeah.
And that shirt that he was, I've got it in a frame in my house, and it's got the sequence of his goal on it in like about 8 or 9 photographs. So it starts down one side and finishes down the other of him. Pre-goal, goal, celebrations, some great shots with the supporters in the background as well. But that's my one piece of genuine memorabilia, if you like, which is never going to leave my possession, really, because it's the one probably I've also got, to be fair, I've got a couple of shirts signed by the whole team when, you know, 3 or 4 or 4 or 5, and then the first 08 Wembley final win as well. So just little things to keep, but it's mainly memories, mate, if I'm honest. You know, same from Butchery Park, you know, I should have probably kept more stuff from there in terms of shirts and stuff, but I think at the time everyone was collecting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. Are you on that Facebook group, the Butchery Park Memories one?
No, I'll have to have a look.
It's quite good. You get some mad stuff in there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and there was people with turnstiles and seats and signage, weren't there?
Yeah.
Brilliant, really. Maybe should have taken one of the seats from the press box or something.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
In terms of away games, then, like, were you able to, like, enjoy it as a spectacle, or were you working quite a lot, really?
Yeah, so when I first started, I was obviously on my own in the team, so I was doing the website report, basically, as we went along, so... I used to, luckily there was no social media then, because nowadays you'd have to update all the social media channels as well, don't you? But I just basically typed the match report as I went along, stuck a top paragraph on it at the end, clicked load at the end of the game, and made sure that was on before I left the ground. Then went and got the manager at the end, did the stuff with the manager, typed that up, used on a Saturday night or whenever the game was, to get that on as well. So yeah, you enjoyed it, but you were obviously sometimes, particularly if it was a game with a lot going on, you're asking people left and right. So I used to sit a lot with John Fieldhouse. I used to travel a lot with John in the early days. And I'd go, what happened there? Or he'd go, what happened there? I was typing. I was doing this, so I missed it. So we kind of relied on each other. But I think what you found was there was a genuine kind of press box camaraderie across wherever you went, so that if you did miss something, a goal, a yellow card, whatever it may be, that people would help you with it.
Yeah.
It was quite difficult sometimes to keep up. So, yeah, away games are great.
I remember coming with you. I came with John Fieldhouse. My dad, from a bit of experience, he got me in it. I think you drove us to Wrexham once, yeah.
Was it Wrexham? God, yeah.
And lovely nil-nil.
I know. That's the thing. But then I remember, you know, some of those early years, some brilliant away games. Just scoring goals for 0-3 or 0-4 scored goals for fun on the road, if I remember.
Oh yeah. What about when likes of obviously the memorable ones like Arsenal in the Premier League? Like, what was that for you? It was just all surreal, really.
Oh yeah, just even going to the ground was surreal, and like walking up and saying, "Oh yeah," with, you know, there'd be myself, Matt, Gareth, Luke. Oh yeah, with the whole City media team. Our accreditation should be with it. It felt strange saying that. And then you sat in a press room where it's like there's like 50 workstations, there's TVs everywhere, the food's on a different level.
I think Burnsy said they had the best food at Arsenal, was that right?
Yeah, they had like an offering before the game, and I think they did fish and chips at half time. I think they had a Ben and Jerry's fridge full of ice cream, which was free. It was a crazy place. I remember thinking, going to that game, thinking the one thing I need to do is enjoy this, because I don't know when this might happen again. We might only get one season at this, and then you go and win, and it's kind of, wow, this is strange. What do we do now? And it did genuinely shock people. I remember being sat in the post-match presser with Phil Brown, and obviously you had a lot of national journalists in the room, you know, a lot of high profile journalists, if you like. And I think there was just that element of shock that it actually happened. But yeah, it was surreal. I mean, I remember getting my dad tickets. My dad and my nephew, who was only young at the time, got them tickets for the away end. And what an experience that was for them. So yeah, and what a goal as well.
Yeah, unbelievable.
I don't I'm not sure I've seen a better goal, if I'm honest, than that. When you see it now again on the timelines, when it comes around, it's just ridiculous, isn't it, Giovanni? But yeah. Gio was a character as well, a big character. So
I always loved his relationship with Barry Lowe.
Yeah.
They're good mates, yeah.
Yeah, well, the kit man has a real close bond with all the players, doesn't he? Because he's basically looking after every whim. But, you know, those lads were great. It's not a plain shirt, but I've got a replica shirt that Gio signed for me before he left that just said, thanks for everything or something like that. And I know when he's been back, I think he's been back with Umbro a couple of times, and he's seen Matt and Gaz, who was still there at the time, and kind of asked how I was, which is... You know, isn't it nice to think that kind of people like that remember you?
yeah.
You know, he's been at some big clubs, he's been a lot of places, and he still wants to know how you are, which is brilliant, really. So, yeah, then, Tottenham, Arsenal, things like that is just, yeah.
What do you remember about team talk on the pitch?
Oh, yeah. So the story behind that for me was that at Man City, the press room was like underneath the stand, so you went down some stairs and down into a big room. I remember being in there having like a cup of tea or getting some food and something. Something kind of happened where someone came over to me and said, "Oh, have you seen what's going on out there?" I was like, "No, what?" And they went, "Oh, you best go have a look." So I remember going out and seeing it and thinking, "Oh, this is interesting. This will make the aftermatch interesting, particularly with the score as it was." So, yeah, I kind of knew what was coming post-match with that, because obviously it was a bad day. It was a bad result. Not memorable at all. And then you go there the year after and it's completely different. But, yeah, the half-time team talk was obviously the only talking point in that post-match press conference, really.
And I mean, you get people, I think it's George Boateng came out at the end, maybe the next season, and said, you know, it all went down from there. Is that something you could feel around the club, or do you think that was just an excuse?
I'm not sure, really. I don't know if it all went... I guess different players would tell you different things, wouldn't they, about how they felt about it, but I know it's been asked on a couple of other podcasts, I think, and I didn't sense anything in the immediate aftermath that was the beginning of the end or anything. I remember thinking this might not go down well with some of the players. For others, they might not be bothered. But it became something to refer back to when we did get relegated, didn't it? You know, it kind of became a focus point. So, it was interesting, and it still gets talked about now, doesn't it? Which is what 14 years
on. Gets included in like the top maddest moments and stuff like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, yeah. You know, and I think they're in the dressing room for quite a long time after that game, as I remember, and I remember the Sky floor manager came over and said, "Can you just go in and see if you can find the manager for us? We need to get the TVs done." I was like, if you want to go in, you can. I think I might stay for five more minutes. I was being a bit, The thing was, it was a strange dressing room because it had double doors into it and then another couple of double doors, and it literally opened into the full dressing room. So if I'd have walked in the middle of, you know, the manager talking, I might not have had a job the next day. I was kind of making my bets a bit, really. And again, like at the time, it's something like, oh no, now you kind of look back and you laugh about it, you smile about it. It is part of history. But yeah, I was like, let's give it 5 minutes, or if you want, you can go in.
And what about when Adam Pearce comes back? How weird was that for you? Or was it just going back in time?
Yeah, it was strange, yeah, and obviously it was a different time, a different situation. It was sad, really, that the club, you know, ended up as it did, I suppose. And, you know, working at the club, I certainly had no sense of what was happening in terms of finances or anything, because it wasn't my kind of place to... to know that, if you know what I mean. So I didn't, yeah, just carried on. And obviously we got relegated. And yeah, it was such a range of emotions in such a short space of time. That 2 or 3 years was, that's, yeah, you kind of go from the Wembley high to staying up on the last day to the second season not being so great. Yeah, it was a real mixed kind of period of emotions, I think, particularly for everyone who'd been through it all. You know, you had some people who'd been there for years, you know, Carol in the ticket office, John Cooper, people who'd been there a lot longer than me, who'd kind of seen this whole thing. And it was just a shame to see it finish like that, really. And I think I left in, or I was, 2011. So not long after that, really. Which, you know, I did just over 10 years, did about 10 and a half years, I think. So, yeah, but kind of grateful for what I had, because it's given me some great mates, you know, I still talk to a lot, some great memories, get to travel to places that I would never have traveled. You know, going to the training camps, going to Beijing, all those things, going to friendlies in Belgium. We did play a friendly in Belgium. I'd never have got to do that. So, and it's things I can tell my little and when he's older, and things that you share with your mates, funny stories and stuff. So yeah, forever kind of grateful for the time I had, mate. You probably couldn't have scripted it.
Yeah.
the way it turned out. So, and yeah, you end up with friends for life from it, which is great, really.
Mm. And I mean, there must be a lot of unique things about working for a football club, but is there anything that stands out in terms of, you know, compared to a normal kind of job?
Yeah, that's it. And it's not a normal type of job when you work in a football club. I think it doesn't matter which department you work in, it's very different to a normal job, because everything ultimately comes down to the team on a Saturday or a Tuesday, whenever they're playing, doesn't it? So commercially, you're much stronger if you're winning every week. It's easier to sell corporate hospitality. Media, it's much nicer when the players are happy and smiling and the manager is, than it is if you're in the middle of a 10-game losing run and no one wants to face the press. So, you know, tickets, ticket office, similar. Much better to deal with happy supporters who are coming to buy tickets in big numbers. So, yeah, it was unique, and it was, I think we said actually that it's a weird kind of thing to say this, but if we could have done it, we probably all would have done it for nothing. Does that make sense? Because we had such I remember that comment coming and thinking, yeah, do you know what? That's absolutely right. We probably, you know, if none of us had bills to pay or cars to run or whatever else we were paying for with our wages, probably would have done it for nothing just to be part of it. And that was the thing. Because the back office team, such a great close-knit unit, and everyone helps everybody else, and everyone chipped in, and everyone kind of went to the Christmas party, you know, stuff like that. Look, only small things, but you knew that if you needed help, that everybody had, no matter which department it was, you know, for Tiger Leisure, Tiger Leisure, they might need help. Ticket office might need help. Media, we might needed help. It didn't matter. Commercial, we all chipped in, and it was just such a great team of people, which, you know, it evolved a bit over time. In the time I was there, in the 10 years, wasn't always the same staff, but a lot of them were there for the biggest part of that. So I think particularly when we, you know, the people at Boothry Park, to go from working there in the bottom league to then go and end up being at Wembley on the day that the club gets the Premier League for the first time ever is just, yeah, phenomenal, really. So great, a great period in the club's history, which I doubt that kind of story will ever be repeated. I don't think by anybody. Could be wrong, but
yeah. Mad. And yeah, like I was thinking, you know, at the time I took it for granted, like what I was doing, like in the press and stuff, but in hindsight, like you definitely did me some massive favours, mate, so I appreciate that. Because I didn't have accreditation or anything, and you sorted us out.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that we tried to do was if people wanted work experience on the media side of it, we tried to facilitate that, because I was very conscious of the fact that if I hadn't been given opportunity by the whole Daily Mail, so like say mentioning before, Colin Young, Chris Harvey, Danny Fulbrook, Richard Single, John Fieldhouse, all those people, where would I have been? And if they'd have said, no, we can't help you, what would I have done next? I don't know. I probably wouldn't have had the path that I had. So I was always conscious of the fact that if we could help, then we would. And I kind of look back now at, you know, the people that I work with, so Matt, Gareth, Jethro, Luke, we all had such a great time within that team. Some of it overlapped, some of it separate times. Was brilliant, really. So yeah, I was always, we got a lot of requests. We couldn't do everything, but I always thought, look, if it helps someone get a leg up in the industry and gets them a job further down the track because they've had this work experience, then great, because that's how I got my start. So yeah, you got to put a bit back.
Yeah, spot on, mate. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably a good finishing point, mate, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's fine, mate. Thank you for having us on. It's been really good.
No, I've enjoyed it.
And I've still got members of your dad running around the pitch doing his good afternoon East End and good afternoon West End. And do you know what? He stood the test of time, that, hasn't it?
Yeah, it got carried on, yeah, until Steve's left now, hasn't he, I think.
But yeah, yeah.
No, yeah. Definitely
they
something
still,
to remember.
They still do it at Hull FC games.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, they go around the ground and say hello to all the stands. And I always think, I don't know why it always pops in my head about your dad doing it, because that's where it started.
Yeah, yeah.
And you think some of the crowds used to have in them early days in the stadium, the East Stand. I think I saw a picture somewhere, which I think was the East Stand, all up on its feet, just as your dad delivered that, and your dad was kind of doing that. You know what I mean? Like, what a great picture that is.
All right, I'm not sure I've seen that.
Yeah, I've seen it somewhere. But yeah, it was brilliant, really. There was somebody once said to me, I can't remember what it was, might have been Rich Madden, who works in radio now. He said, I'd give him my right arm for that job you had at that time. I said, lucky, but also I had to work hard at it, you know, because it didn't just all come naturally, particularly when you got in the Premier League. It was quite overbearing at times, but I learned to deal with it. So yeah, I'm still here.
I suppose I don't mention Wembley much already, but what was like the party like that night, kind of thing, and then obviously like the thing in town centre, yeah, the parade.
Yeah, so the team stayed just outside of London, so we didn't go to that. We just went to, there was a little Italian restaurant not far from our hotel, and we went back there after the game, after everything had finished. Like, I remember coming out of Wembley, going back to the tube station, there wasn't one person around.
Really?
Just loads of, yeah, it was just, because it was so long after, because all the press thing had taken so long. I think we had a drink before we left there. Just remember Wembley deserted outside. And then we went back, we got some food, and literally everyone just went to bed, because it was just, I think, probably emotionally draining.
Yeah.
Do you know, rather than physically, but emotionally, I think everyone was just done. So yeah, and then obviously we went back, travelled back the next day, and then the parade was on the Monday, wasn't it? So we set up the parade with the council, organised that, and that was, yeah, I mean, that's phenomenal, really. I had to organise the players into the right order to go onto the balcony, so I had to kind of line them up and say, right, you're next, because Burnsy had a running order, and that running order had to match the person who walked out next. Yeah, big responsibilities. But no, it was a great day, that. We had a real good day. I think that night was probably our party as staff, if I'm honest.
Okay, right.
After that was done. Yeah, after that was done, and the open top bus thing before it was just, you know, the amount of people on the streets and stuff was incredible, really.
And you're saying that's where you met your wife, obviously?
Yeah, she was organising the council side of it. So, it's a funny story with that, actually, because I got to, when the open top bus got to the City Hall, obviously with different levels of accreditation. And my accreditation wasn't the right one. So I was like, oh, it said like no balcony access, no access to the players area. I was like, what am I going to do now then? Because I can't. I mean, they sorted it out, but it was just quite funny at the time. So we were like, all right, yeah, you can't come in here. You haven't got the right badge. I was like, yeah, no, but I'm organising the players and stuff. So they went and got me a badge that got me into the right areas. So, it was good, mate. It was I've actually got as well. I got Dave Richardson, who's a photographer. We're one of the two photographers, him and Lofty. Dave took a photo of me. I went around and got a photo with each of the players, and I've still got them at home.
I think I saw them on your Twitter, yeah.
Yeah, so I've got one with basically everyone who was there, all the players who were there. I got one with Barry, Kit Mann, one with Brian Orton, Steve Parkin, the manager. I just thought at the time, I remember grabbing Dave saying, do me a favour, can you just whiz around with us? Just something that I thought I could keep that was mine. And again, I show my little boy. Obviously, he's not yet aware of who those players are, but in another 4 or 5 years' time, he'll probably understand who they were, or he can Google them. Great times. Like you're saying, not particularly Boothry Park related, but then again, it all started at Boothry Park, didn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it started for me there. That incredible era for the club kind of started there, didn't it, I suppose? With Adam taking it on. So, yeah, great times, mate. I'd gladly go back and do it all again. I'm sure you would as well, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'd appreciate it even more now, I think, yeah.
That's the thing, isn't it? You kind of look back and think, oh, I didn't quite live it enough, but it's because you're in it. I don't think you can you? You just have to do you kind of, for us, you did your job and that was it. And I mean, you know, we enjoyed it, of course we did. But I think if you had a second go at it, you'd probably enjoy it a bit more and probably not get as mad at certain things when things went wrong or whatever. But that was just part of it, wasn't it? So, yeah.
Yeah. And my only regret is I went to 38 league games that season, but I missed Arsenal and I missed Newcastle away, which I've always regretted. But there we go.
Yeah. Was that when... Is that when Fergs broke his leg?
We won the game, didn't we? Yeah.
There was another shorts episode there, wasn't there? I think we had their away shorts on or something. Lezard probably tell you, but...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. Fergs. Yeah, wasn't a good challenge, that was it?
When we went back to Arsenal and there was that spitting incident as well? Did you see much of that?
No, I didn't see it because I was actually... Like, usually a couple of minutes before the end of the game, I'd leave my seat to go to get down to the tunnel area to get ready to get the manager and the players, you know. I used to look after the manager, and either Matt or Gaz would tend to look after the player so that, you know, we'd go around at the same time, if you like. So I remember going down there with a couple of minutes to go, and I didn't actually see the incident itself. I just saw everyone running in, you know, through... off the pitch, down the tunnel. I just didn't have a clue what was going on till afterwards. Similar thing happened to me at Portsmouth, where I think under Ian Dowie, I think it's Ian Dowie's first game. So we're at Portsmouth. I think I left my seat, was 2-1 up with stoppage time left. And by the time I got downstairs, I think we were 3-2 down. So that kind of 5-minute period of leaving your seat to get to where you need to be. Yeah, it sometimes I miss things.
Yeah.
And you're like going, what's going on here? that one good at all, was it? The whole Spitgate thing. So
no, it's weird. I think that's when it got, I don't know, was it a bit sour between us and Arsenal for a while, wasn't it? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, like I say, I missed it because I was coming down loads of stairs to get to the tunnel from the seats. But that's not, you know, yeah.
Very odd.
Yeah, great times though. In general, I mean, great 10 years. So
yeah. All right, mate. Well, I'm sure I could think about things to talk about for ages, but it's probably
I'm sure you've got plenty to cut and shoot from all that, can't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Give my best to your wife, though, because I remember she was always really nice to me on a match day and that.
Yeah. She used to man the door on the press lounge, didn't she? Do you know what? I was on about this the other week. I got the, you know, the behind the scenes books, photography books.
Yeah, really good. Yeah.
I got them out and Sean and Isaac, and I'm in it. I think I'm in one of them once and Rachel's in them twice. She was only match day staff, like volunteer match day staff. And I was only in it once.
Oh, is she volunteering?
Yeah, she's coming to help us. Yeah, she's coming to help. Kind of sand people in and stuff. So, and then like, yeah, look after the kind of room. But it, yeah, my little man found that highly amusing.
Her and Carly Duffin, wasn't it?
Yeah, they used to hang around together. They used to go to away games and stuff as well. So
Yeah.
Carly was part of our team in the second, or was it the first and the second season? Probably the first and the second season. So yeah, Carly joined our team as well. So yeah, we had a fair amount going on then.
That room was funny. Like, we had like your pre-match meal, and just some surreal moments. I'd just sit down and suddenly be in the middle of like Andy Gray and Kelly Dalglish or something.
Yeah, Chris Waddle. Stan Collymore. I know what you mean. I'd kind of walk in the room and they'd be like, Stan Collymore having the food. I'm like, Stan Collymore. That's Chris Waddle.
I remember Collymore was just wandering around on the upper tier once, because you had to go through the upper tier to get to the half-time room, didn't you?
Yeah, he did, yeah. That Starstruck thing was weird. Old Trafford, that first time we went there that season, stood in the tunnel, and Man United's players came past me to go out to warm up. So you got Giggs, Rooney, all these players, and they're like, Neville, and they're like, God, this is really... I've only ever seen these on TV, and now they're running past me, like... It was a strange thing to think about. They were like literally a yard from you.
Yeah.
So, oh dear. But you got, you know, after the first few months, like, you got used to that anyway. Because I guess, you know, people like that with our players, weren't they? But because you saw them every day of the week, or 5-6 days a week, you didn't see them in that light. So they were just normal people, which all of them were, really. So, yeah.
I think even for the players, some of them, like, was there a picture of Paul Duffin and Bernard Mendy after at Old Trafford after the game, where he's, like, a bit overwhelmed by playing in that game kind of thing, yeah?
Yeah, probably, yeah. I mean, they were incredible times, weren't they, for... I know it didn't end well, obviously, at the end of the second season, but... I can't imagine anybody who experienced them two seasons didn't take a lot of good times from it, particularly the first year. I mean, the first year when you're winning at Tottenham and Arsenal and stuff, and beating West Ham at home and stuff, was just, yeah, it was like it wasn't happening.
Yeah.
But it was good, mate. Great times. That's why now I don't mind doing the OSC events if they've got past players going.
So what's your involvement with that? Sorry, yeah.
The OSC, I used to help them when I worked at the club, and now I just help them. So if they've got, they want to put on an event somewhere, I don't know, say the Market Wheaton branch or the Haunted branch, Beverley branch, Hull. So they did one the other night in Hull, didn't they? With the manager and the chief exec and the director of football. But I tend to host the past player ones. So that probably because I have an affiliation with those people, those players, and we know we're on the same page from because we were all part of that era. Whereas I think with the current setup, it's probably not fair for me to do that really because I'm not close enough to it. So, and quite often, you know, they'll say, oh, do you mind contacting player X or player Y, whoever they want, and see if they'll come and do it? So, yeah, I don't mind doing that. It's good fun because we just sit and talk about those times, really. And sometimes through a conversation, you suddenly think, oh, yeah, do you remember when that happened? But you kind of rack your brains before it, trying to think of things that happened. And normally you can't write anything down, but then it just comes out the conversation. Or someone in the audience will ask it. So, yeah, I've enjoyed doing a few of those, to be honest. And most of the lads who who you ask are more than willing, you know, in most cases to travel as well, by the way. A lot of them travel. So we got quite a few at Rich Gardam's book launch, the Decade, the book, which did really well. You had Jason Price came across and people like that. Obviously you've got Dean Windus in the city, you've got Nick Bambi in the city and Ian Ashby in the city, but you know, for some of the other lads that travel, but yeah, they don't mind doing it, which is nice. So you'll never catch that tiger.
Thanks for listening to this episode of This Was Boothry Park. As always, just like to give a quick shout out to those who made the research easy, including OnCloud 7, TigerTube Player, Tiger Bass, and Rich Gardam's The Decade.